Welcome back to, as I see it, an umpire podcast. I am your host, Joe Sweeney. I am in the state of Illinois, so I am an IHSA official. I officiate high school baseball and softball, as well as junior high. And we use the NFHS rule set for high school ball. I started this podcast because my friends at work encouraged me to. They enjoyed hearing stories, and they thought that it would be nice to share these stories. So I enjoy talking about it. I enjoy umpiring. I decided to start a podcast. So give a like on Spotify. I'm on all the other platforms that you listen to on, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. So give me a like. Follow me on Facebook, As I See It, an Umpire Podcast. And also send us an email at asiseitpodcast1995@gmail.com. So let's get started. In this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the games I did not for the money. Going to talk about some games that I did get paid for. I had three of those this week. We are also going to review a rule that is often misunderstood. It is one that I had to call several times in my games. And finally, we're going to wrap it up with a listener email. I had two games this week that I did not for the money. Games that I officiated in that I did not get paid for, which is absolutely fine because I enjoy it. The first one happened on a road game that my daughter was playing in. It was a conference game. I was standing in the outfield with my family, talking about the game, getting ready to watch some high-quality softball. I get a text from one of the other parents that says that they are needing an official. I told them that I would do it until the other official got there. But as it would happen, the head coach gives me a big wave and says, come on down. So we were standing out in center field, so I jogged around to the home dugout. And just to be sure, before I walked out on the field and made a complete imbecile of myself, I asked the coach, did you need an umpire? She's like, yeah, we did need an umpire. Come on in. As I'm walking out on the field, I'm walking past the home plate umpire, introduced myself, and did a quick pregame, talked about things that I would be doing and he would be doing. Didn't take more than a minute just because we were trying to get the game going. I ended up on bases until the scheduled official got there. So one of the first plays that I had to make a call on was my daughter. She had a nice little single between the left and center fielder, made it to first base. The next batter ends up striking out, swinging through strike three. And as I noticed during the rest of the game, every time there was a runner on and they swung through strike three, they would a pickoff attempt. And so my daughter was on first base, threw down to first, called her out. They tagged her out, and the ride home, I was afraid wasn't going to be a pleasant one, but she wasn't upset with me. She just told me that she was safe, and we just have to agree to disagree. I didn't have many more plays. I had one nice little double play that went against the home team. They turned it really well, both ends of it. And that was about it. The other official showed up after the end of the first inning, and that was it. The next game that I did, not for the money, was a home game. It was against a conference team, and afterward, there was a JV game. As our home team was out in the outfield doing their post-game powwow, Coach hollered over at me and said, hey, we need an umpire if you want to come up. I obliged, got my gear on, threw my clothes on, and away we went. We had two high school girls from the varsity team that was on the bases, and they did a fine job. Just had to call a couple outs here and there, not very many. We did see a nice home run. I'm always glad to get experience whenever I can. Since I don't do much softball, being able to call balls and strikes in softball is a little different than baseball. The ball comes in a little bit differently. There's a little bit shorter of a reaction time from the pitcher's rubber, where the pitcher delivers the pitch to the plate in softball. So I was just trying to make that adjustment and follow the ball all the way to the glove. So that was my not for the money games. We're going to talk about the games that I had this week that I did have scheduled. I had four of them scheduled, actually. And one of them, as it turns out, got rained out. I had originally only had three scheduled. They had one pop up and they needed an umpire for, and I got a text from the athletic director and said, yeah, I'd be glad to do it. It was a JV game. that they had added to their schedule locally, and so I decided to do that. That first one was a pretty uneventful game. I was on bases, and there was really not much going on. It was a well-played game. There were several hits, several runs scored. Not very many close plays at all. And the one play that I had any kind of questions about or that would even warrant talking about was an infield fly rule. This was a ball that was hit to the second baseman area, somewhere in the sixth hole. There were runners on first and second with less than two outs. As we'll get into a little bit later, we'll get more into the rule, but the rule states that a fair pop fly can be caught by an infielder with ordinary effort. So as the ball gets hit, I look up to see that it's a fly ball. I look down at the infielder to check his effort, if it's going to be caught by an infielder. And as I'm watching him run back, I see that I don't feel like this is ordinary effort. So I did not call it. My partner did call it, which was fine. He's a very experienced umpire. And again, it's a judgment call. I also signaled infield fly, and the ball was not caught. The runners and the infield fly, regardless, can advance at their own risk once the ball is touched. So I think that the home team ended up scoring at least a run off of it, and they still had a runner on base. I want to say that the bases might have been loaded. It might have very well been that two runs had scored. I don't remember that at that time, but not a big deal. My partner called it. One of the coaches that was standing by the home dugout afterward had asked me about it and what actually the rule was, so I explained it to him. We're going to get more into the infield fly rule in our next segment. The second game that I worked was also a JV game for the same home team, our local team, and this game might have been the game that was added to my schedule. As I get home to get dressed, I text the AD because at that point I knew he didn't have another umpire. One of the coaches was going to umpire the bases. And my son got home from work, and I asked him if he wanted to do that. This was my youngest son, not the one that I worked with last time. And he said, yeah. He said, I didn't know it was with you. So he said, yeah, I'll be glad to do it. So we both show up to the field, and I had planned on doing plate. We both show up to the field. There's already another umpire there. And the coach said, well, we've got three of you here. No big deal. Just go out and do three-man, I guess, which was an interesting thing. And that's what I want to talk about in this game. None of the three of us had ever worked three-man crew before. This is something that you get into at higher levels and at postseason. I have looked it over, but it's nothing that I remember because I had no plans of ever working three-man crew. So we kind of pre-game together there on the field. We just kind of said, we'll wing it. We'll play it by ear, just however we think it needs to work best. So being that it was a three-man crew, I had a guy down the third baseline, and there was a ball that went foul. It was beyond third base, and we had talked that that would be his call, but because I'm used to calling the lines, I went ahead and called foul, and he did too. We both fouled the ball, killed the play. Between the half inning, he come up to me, and we were kind of talking about, hey, I apologize, that was your call. We're standing over by a fence, and I hear this voice behind me, because we're talking about not knowing how to run three-man crew, and a voice comes behind me, and he says, I could answer that question for you. Well, one of the kids' dads was an umpire many years ago in the Frontier League, I believe it was. And so he kind of explained how to run three-man crew. He said, you always want an umpire out in front of the play. So if you've got a runner on first, the third base umpire comes over and he stands in what would be the B or the C position. I'm still not quite sure which one. I need to go study this. If you have a runner on second or a runner on first and second, he would go back because he would be in front of the play if there were a play at third base. So he kind of got a quick rundown of it, and it was just an interesting thing because none of us had worked it, and we kind of all got together after we figured it out, and we kind of changed our rotation up, and Coach even noticed. He's like, he come over, and he said, I noticed you guys changed your rotation. I said, yeah, we got a little instruction on it, and I know that hopefully there's more three-man crew to come in my future down the road in postseason or at higher levels. And then the last game that I did this week was a bit of a lopsided game. The partner that I had worked with, I had never seen this before, rides up on a motorcycle, and we had agreed that he was going to do plate. And I'm thinking to myself, where is his gear at? Well, he had his gear in his saddlebag or the box on the back of his motorcycle. Well, I had never seen that. Not only that, he was a pastor at a church, so a motorcycle riding pastor who umpires and shows up on his games in a motorcycle. It was unique, and I had not yet ever seen that before. It's pretty interesting and great and wonderful. The home team was a little bit shorthanded, to say the least. This is a really small school in our area, and the coach that coaches the baseball team is also the coach for the basketball team. I believe he's the mayor of the town. He's the lead singer of the band and the driver of the Winnebago as well. But they were just a little bit shorthanded, and the team that they were playing was pretty decent. It ended up being pretty lopsided. It was a low-pressure game, and I knew that it probably would be going in. So this was something that I was going to work on, was my communication and making sure that I focused on certain things. And I was able to do that. Just because it's low pressure, you can relax a little bit. And the two things I wanted to work on was communicating. So anytime that I was going to take a play or I was going to take a certain ball, I made sure that I hollered it out to my partner, "Hey, Tim, I've got the ball," or "Hey, Tim, I've got the runner." So that was one thing I was able to slow down, and also to use better mechanics. There was a play at first. The first baseman had to come off the bag to get the throw. It pulled him off, and the runner was safe. So I got to use the mechanic that he was safe, and then you use your hands and kind of swipe to the side to say, "Hey, safe, he was off the bag." So that was one of the things that I actually had the chance to do, to be able to use better mechanics, but it was because it was a low pressure game and I could slow down a bit. The other thing that we had in this game was we had two infield flies. Kind of interesting. I've not had but three all year long, and one of them was in the previous game I talked about, and this one they were all textbook infield flies. As I'm calling simultaneously, my partner was calling as well. It was that easy to call. Yeah, so low pressure games, able to work on some things. Enjoy doing it. For this next segment, we're going to talk about one of the most often misunderstood rules in the game. I remember the first time that I understood this rule, I was coaching at a low level, and I had always heard of the infield fly rule, but I never really understood it. So we had a game, a 12U game, that my oldest son was playing in, and an infield fly was called, and that was about the first time I had ever seen it from a coach perspective. It was new. I was a new coach, and it was something that was explained to me, and it's kind of stuck with me from then on. There's also been a couple of other types of misunderstandings. People understand that it's an infield fly if first and second or first, second, and third are occupied with less than two outs. But there's a little bit more that goes with the rule, and I'm going to go ahead and read the rules straight out of both of the rule books for both softball and baseball. In the baseball rule book, it's 219, infield fly. An infield fly is a fair fly, not including a line drive nor an attempted bunt, which can be caught by an infielder with ordinary effort. Rule does not preclude outfielders from being allowed to attempt to make the catch, and provided that the hit is made before two are out and at a time when first and second base or all bases are occupied. When it seems apparent that the batted ball will be an infield fly, the umpire immediately announces it for the benefit of the runners. If the ball is near the baseline, the umpire shall declare infield fly if fair. So that is straight out of the baseball rule book. And the rule book for softball has it worded just a little bit differently. In the softball rule book, it's 230, infield fly, when declared by the umpire, a fair fly, not including a line drive or an attempted bunt, that can be caught by an infielder with ordinary effort when runners are on first, second, or all three bases are occupied before there are two outs in the inning. Any defensive player positioned in the infield at the time of the pitch shall be considered an infielder for the purpose of this rule. The rule does not preclude outfielders from being permitted to make the catch. The ball is live, the batter is out, which removes the force, but runners may advance at their own risk. The runners may tag up and advance as soon as the batted ball is touched by an infielder. If a declared infield fly becomes foul, it is treated as a foul ball and not an infield fly. So the rules are stated just a little bit different. Basically, they're interpreted the same way, except that in the softball rule book, it states differently that any defensive player positioned in the infield at the time of the pitch shall be considered an infielder for the purpose of the rule. So I guess if you decide you want to bring all three of your outfielders and position them on the infield, then any of those that could catch the ball with ordinary effort would be considered an infielder to help make the rule an infield fly. So this is one of those rules that are often misunderstood. And I was having a conversation about the first game that we talked about this week. And I was having a conversation with one of the dads. I knew the player. I knew the player's dad. And we talked about the rule. And he said, and as I tell you, it was misunderstood, he thought that the rule was could be caught by an infielder. And so as we're talking about it, I told him, with ordinary effort. He kind of gave me a look. What do you mean with ordinary effort? I said, yes, the rule states that it says if an can be caught by an infielder with ordinary effort. So that was a rule that even that dad didn't know, and I don't fault him for that. You know, parents don't always, you know, they don't dive into the rule book. They watch their kids play. They kind of take the rules as they come, just like some of the situations I see. You know, take them as they come to try and figure them out. And so they don't always have their noses in the rule book. So it's often misunderstood. And if you remember a few years back, one of the most famous ones, I am a St. Louis Cardinal fan, one of the most famous infield fly calls of recent years was in the 2012 postseason game where the Cardinals played the Atlanta Braves. And at the time, Pete Cosmo was their shortstop. And he was going back for a ball, and he ended up getting called off by Matt Holliday, or so he thought. And just before the ball came down, the left field umpire, who was Sam Holbrook, he called infield fly. And it kind of created some controversy. The ball ended up hitting the ground. Nobody even touched it. The shortstop thought that the outfielder called it, who was Matt Holliday. And if you go back and watch the video, you can see this clearly. But it is one of those things that is very misunderstood. So hopefully now you know just a little bit more about the infield fly. So for our last segment today, we're going to get into a listener email. This email comes from Drew in Kansas. And Drew writes, good stuff on the podcast. I just started umpiring and I had 513/14U solo games last week. One thing I noticed was I struggled calling the outside strike, the same as the inside strike. I asked a couple of the coaches after the games, and they confirmed my thoughts. Besides repetition, is there another way to improve on the outside part of the plate? I stand in the slot when I am behind the plate. Love the scriptures at the end. Thank you, Drew, for your email. And I went ahead and responded to Drew. And I wasn't going to mention this on the podcast because I knew that I might get beat up over calling balls and strikes. And I'm sure that every umpire has their own way of how they call balls and strikes. Not every umpire sets up in the slot. Most do nowadays. It's been determined that the slot is a safer spot for foul balls. And also, I think it gives you a really good vantage point. Some guys still use the box, which is right behind the catcher, and they basically, the umpire puts their head above the catcher to see the zone. And so I decided to respond to Drew how I determine ball strike. This one thing that I have struggled with all year long is consistency. And the main reason is because I am not following the ball all the way to the glove most times. And it's something that I notice when I make my calls too quick. So what I responded to Drew was, number one, you have to follow the ball all the way to the glove. You have to pause and determine where the pitch crossed the plate. But also what I told Drew was another factor that I use and that I have been told to use at this umpire camp that I went to by a lot of high-level guys was where the pitch is caught helps you determine ball strike. So you kind of have to add all of those things up, watching it to the glove, watching it cross the plate, and also watch the final resting spot of the catcher. And the way you use the catcher is if you just imagine the catcher squatted behind the plate, and with the ball coming in, if he catches it at his knees up to somewhere where you determine on his face mask to be the high part of the strike, that's the top and the bottom of the zone. inside out of the zone is basically if he is squatted with his knees pointing down the foul lines, the width of his knees is typically the width of the strike zone. So that's what I answered to Drew. This is what I try to use, and it gives you another point of reference. And when I first started using this, it really helped a lot. It seemed to make my strike zone more consistent. But when you get into actual games, there's a lot of things you have to think about. I'd be honest, I get nervous. There's a lot of pressure on, you know, coaches want their teams to win. You got both coaches, you know, they're going to want to get as many strikes as they can for their guys. And so those are the pressures that you put on yourself, but you just really have to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And, that's where I know that I get caught a little bit, get caught watching the ball out front, and I don't always follow it to the glove. But when I do follow it to the glove and it's caught within that frame of reference, that's been a pretty reliable strike zone for me. That's pretty consistent. So those are the things that I use. Again, I appreciate Drew for responding. And if you have any questions, if you have a idea for a future segment, please email me at asiseeitpodcast1995. I would love to hear from you guys. Please tell me where you're from. Please let me know what your question is or an idea for a future segment. Again, like I said, I'm working on some things for some future episodes. Coming up is summer ball. I schedule umpires for our local league. We have several high school umpires and young umpires that do the lower levels, the lower ages, and I think they seem to enjoy it. They're coming back. Most of them are coming back for a second year, and I've got a couple newbies this year, which is good. I always enjoy talking and teaching young people how to umpire and getting them continue to be involved in the game. So that's it for this episode. Please give me a follow, like, and subscribe. So the email once again is asiseeitpodcast1995. Shoot me an email. And as always, I want to leave you off with just a bit of scripture. Until next time, this comes from John 16. This is verse 33. I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. See you next time.